Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to this week's episode of Radio Established to Address Life. I'm your host, Levo. Goodness gracious, how the hell I remember? I stuttered on the damn name of the show, but it happens like that sometimes. Look, this week we're going to discuss the Kenosha verdict. So the boy Kyle Rittenhouse was on trial for it wasn't even murder. Aggravated assault. It was a number of assault charges because, you know, every state is different and the charges depending on the state differ, so on and so forth. But he killed two people, he injured a third, and he was on trial for those acts during a Black Matters Live. Black Lives Matter. I'm all twisted this morning. A Black Lives Matter demonstration following the death of a Black man in the state of Wisconsin. So, these are white folks that he killed. Okay, and to be quite honest with you, I'm concerned. I'm concerned because, you know, this white on white crowd has to stop. It's just getting out of hand. And
you know what?
I don't know what we're going
to
do.
Let me stop.
What?
I'm going to have to stop
what?
You, right? Just stop.
What? What I said?
You stay on some subterfuge. You know that. If this
what I do.
But no, you know, I'm stopping you. But honestly, white on white crime is the prevailing crime on the planet. A lot, and I ask them this all the time: Why y'all don't say "ow" when y'all hurt each other? Just now, what we just watched, like the Rosenbaum family, that's the name of the first guy, right? It was like something Rosenbaum. Why aren't the Rosenbaums on the news right now? Why aren't they saying "ow"? The other guy's name was Hurley, Anthony Hurley, and the best you got out of the Hurley family is them holding each other's hands real tight and leaning their head down crying when the not guilty verdict comes. They didn't say ow. When you hit us, we go ow. Everybody come look at this. Help me. Ow.
But do you think that is a part of the reason that he got off? Meaning, you know, they see themselves in the agitator of the violence. So they feel for their loved one that was lost, but they also feel for the aggressor. Because they don't want to see little Bobby, in this case, little Kyle, go to prison. That would just not be nice. I mean, what would his mom do? What would I do?
I mean, what did Timothy McVeigh's mama do? What did Charlie Manson's mama eventually do? What did Ted Bundy's mama do? What did, you know, all these, I do not understand how these families swallow the hurt like that. And I guess I'm just not privy to how European Americans heal. Like, how after the Civil War, how did they heal the fact that they killed each other, you know, when one family, did they didn't say nothing? It wasn't no ow or, you know, I know how we heal. We heal by killing everybody involved until there's nobody left to kill, and then everybody shuts up.
So no DNA.
Retaliation is our healing process. And if it wasn't so, it would only be one or two dead people. It wouldn't be two brothers dead and a cousin in the same family all going up against, some other force. Our heel is we're eye for an eye people. I hear that.
An eye for an eye people.
We're an eye for an eye
an
people.
Eye for, I guess we took the Bible literally, not just figuratively.
Way too way, and I mean so very way. That allegory is not literal, okay? However, I'm interested in how do. Like, what is the Hurley family about to do? Because I can tell you, if someone else hurts us, they either got a chance. We either have a chance to hurt them back, or they have to pay.
Mm.
We will consider cash payouts as an apology.
That's an issue, though. That's an issue. You know, it's an issue if. Specifically, when you talk about if government is the actor of the violence, so you take the money and they convince you, well, if you take the money, you can't say anything. That's my issue.
Shut the fuck up. That is called it's an NDA. I think it's called
non-disclosure agreement, right? NDA, but you can't. Well, you can, but it doesn't make sense, nor does it help anybody, for you to take the money and hush up. You know, you ain't going to get me in that trick, man. You ain't offering me no money and then telling me, too, I have to shut up. No, because I'm still hurt, and you were still wrong, and you still need to understand that the restitution is appropriate because someone lost their life. But that doesn't mean that it all goes away just because you made a payment. That it don't work that way. You know, I was talking to a good friend of mine, and she calls me for advice on men and stuff like that. And we got into a conversation because, and a little bit of a disagreement because, you know, she says, yo, whenever we talk about matters of the heart, you want to make it about a business sense, or you want to make it cold. And I told her, I was like, you know, I understand from your perspective that it's not cold. It's warm. It's loving. It's feelings. It's all this and all that. But you're dealing with a man. A lot of men don't think like that. A lot of men think of it, think of everything as a transaction. It's just a transaction. That's all it is. That's all it was. There's nothing emotional about it. There's nothing feeling about it. I did this. You did that. I wanted this. You said, give me this. I gave you that. I got what I wanted. That's it. Nothing more. Nothing more. Nothing more, nothing less. And when we go and we look at folks killing one another, this cat is out in the streets patrolling property that wasn't his. Why? Why was he there? For what?
Like that's the whole, like, you know, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Why, that's why I asked you to put it. If you were from another, I don't know, planet, and you've listened to these things in chronological order, that's what I think, like you just said. Don't listen to this story like you're a property-owning white man.
Right.
Take it moment, like literally second by second, or, you know, instance by instance. A person watches on the news because it's not a part of his community, right? He watches on the news or listens to somebody's commentary about an event that's happening away from in an area not where he's at. Okay? It puts some kind of feeling in his heart that he needs to act. He talks to his parent about his desire to act. She agrees. They together get in a car with an assault rifle. He can't drive. She drives him to this location where he heard the news about. He don't even know the location. He gets out of the car and just starts walking towards the chaos, whatever that was.
Drops him off like she's taking his ass to the mall. Go ahead, baby.
Like Chuck E. Cheese. Go get yourself, shoot yourself up some shoes. Yeah. He is 17 and has left one state and moved to another state. Is that correct? He's from another state, right?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. He lives in Illinois.
Okay.
He came from Illinois to Wisconsin.
From Illinois to with his mama got in a car with a gun and left one state and went to another state, right? She drops him off in the middle of a conflict that is currently already being attended to by law enforcement, right?
Yep.
So he decides not to wait until law enforcement deputizes him. He does not wait until a law enforcement officer in his facility gets incapacitated, right? None of that. The officers were still doing their job.
Still doing their job.
And he's decided, I guess it was something about the way the officers who got paid to handle that were doing it that he felt was not good enough, fast enough, I don't know, strong enough, forceful enough. So he decided to, without any law enforcement training at all, assume the role of a law enforcement officer. And in doing so, killed two people who did not have, one of which had no weapon. The other, I want to say he had a pipe and a strike tire with
allegedly
no gun.
Aimed a gun. No, one of them allegedly aimed a gun at him.
One of them waved
one
a
of
gun
them did
at him.
Right.
Allegedly waved a gun. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But at least two of them had no firearm or no way to, you know, shoot or
protect
harm
themselves.
Him, right?
Correct. Correct.
So, after he hurt those people, he did what? He went to a bar with some friends, right? At 17, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
You find him after that in a bar drinking alcohol. Is that correct?
Correct.
I mean, so when all that got typed out and said and done, that young man walked home. He went home to his mama.
He didn't walk home.
You know what I'm saying? He cakewalked. He cakewalked home.
No, he still didn't walk home. Remember, his mama had to come get him. He lived in another state.
That's why he couldn't leave the state. So his mama came, got him.
I'm
assuming he told her that he shot up some people. Mm. I mean, I guess I'm a little confused personally.
How so? I don't understand what you're confusing this for. He's a white man in America with a gun. What is wrong with that? He shot some people. What's wrong with that? He's a white man in America with a gun.
Because,
you remember
those two white people that were standing on their porch with the AK, with the AR-15s and stuff?
In Missouri.
The white man and that white lady that was calling themselves standing their ground on their property.
Right.
Now,
correct.
I didn't like them, but I heard them. I heard that's the yard, and they got nervous, right? I don't understand why she drove him there.
Because he asked
I have a
14.
I do have a son. But in 3 years from now, I doubt my son is going to be able to tell me something that makes me put him in an AR-15 in a car and drive.
Okay. You see his mama?
I'm just a little confused. That's all. I mean,
did you see his mama?
I did see his mom.
See the pictures of his
mama. I saw what was happening there. Yeah.
And that don't answer none of your questions. I'm just asking a question.
Well, no, it doesn't, because I guess I'm waiting for somebody to explain
for what?
To me. Like the police, like when you see the footage, the police are there, son. You don't need to go. The police are there. That's a statement. I think it's illegal for us to leave this state with this gun. That's a statement. Even if I take you and you want to be a part of the protest, I'm going to stay with you so that nothing happens to you. Not you don't do anything to somebody else. I don't want anything to, you know, the police to think you're a part of the, you know, problem and put you in
the
threat.
Okay, again, I ask the question. Did you see the pictures of his mama?
I saw her sitting in the courtroom. I saw her.
Okay.
I know we're dealing with one of Trump's 16 wives. I know what we're dealing with. But listen, that's her son. That's her,
okay.
I think her baby boy.
Mm.
You don't feed your baby boy.
Sister?
You understand, we got a whole clause for our sons. If he's our only son, he don't even have to go to war, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
we got
true.
Whole
not
clauses
anymore.
For our sons so that we can keep
that's not true
our...
anymore.
Huh?
That's not true anymore. That's not true anymore.
Wow. You can send your. They can ask you to send your only child into war.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Michael Jackson.
I didn't know that.
That.
I thought that was,
y'all,
I thought that was a clause.
They don't care about
in
us.
Order to keep white people alive, you keep letting them feed that baby into there. You won't have no more white people.
White folks don't care.
Huh?
White folks don't care. White folks, the white folks that matter, they don't care. Because it's never going to be their child. Because they have money. So they don't care.
See, this
or
is what I'm saying. This is not, but these are not poor whites. An AR-15 is not cheap. And that was not his only gun.
It was. Before the pandemic, they were. You could get an AR-15 for $300, $400 before the pandemic. Now, they're $1,000, $1,200, $1,500. But before the pandemic, they were $300, $400. Easy. Easy. Look, I was looking at one for the longest time in Pennsylvania. And honestly, it was like $439. You know what I'm saying? Only because the state of Maryland requires blah, 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 boom. The ones that you could buy for Pennsylvania and other states were even cheaper. So they were fairly
I forget, though.
Affordable.
One of the things that I always forget is that family dynamic with white women, it is very different. You can threaten, white children threaten, smack, and harm their parents. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they do, and get away with it.
White
and
children are able
so,
to
so,
fail.
You know,
that's why they have Catholic school and them
there.
I call them pay-for-play schools, because they won't. If you pay for a certain school, they can't fail your child.
But you say you're sitting here trying to rationalize how this woman put her son in the car. He said, "Mom, I need you to take me there. I need you to take me there fucking now." That's what he said.
I mean, I guess he just told her, bitch, get up right now and take me to the action.
But in so many,
and whatever she
said,
I guess, was null and void. Like, where is Daddy Rittenhouse? You understand? Where's Grandpa Rittenhouse? Or why is there no?
Never
mind, because I realize now, Grandpa and Daddy Rittenhouse are akin to the
people
who ran after Ahmaud Arbery and ran him over and lynched him like that. They daddies and grandfathers is the same dudes that's a part of that other lynch mob. So it ain't no point in asking for Chienchus Observer within the family. They don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but in the black community, but this was killing me, though, Lee. Look, our knuckleheads, our B-boys, our dope dealers, our shooters, our hitters. Hey, we be like, man, you need to quit killing people. We tell them that. We tell our sons, boy, get out of my kitchen. I don't even want you in my kitchen. You'll fuck around beat and use one of my pots to make crack.
Yeah.
We tell our sons.
Yeah.
Don't come around here with that dope money. I don't even buy. I mean, not all of us now. Some of us then got sick in the game. But it used to be, don't come around here with no damn dope money. I don't want to see it.
That's right. You're right.
Absolutely. We do not feed into, when our sons come to mama, let me borrow $500. We'd be like, what? Why in the hell would you need $500?
Sound like you need to get a job.
Sound like you, and even if you do get a job, if you find out we're using your job money to buy guns and dope, we're going to get mad and say something about that. And it's your money.
I ain't got no $500.
Why is there
money
going through? I mean, how different can it be? And I've seen the one white family that I have been privy to see the inner workings of, they were affluent, but they were still struggle. All their money came from getting a good, decent job through education. None of the money had rained down on them from above. You know what I'm saying? Previous generations. They had got very little.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, had given very little to the children that were of my age group. Okay? The best that he would get, the guy that I was able to visit and chill with, the best he would get is a secondhand car every year, but it would be like a because his mama worked for Ford. So he could get one of them Ford cars that didn't sell or had a rip in the seat or had a ding in the back or had a upside down tail. You know what I'm talking about, Lee? They would give him one of them cars that was 99.9% right but didn't get sold right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That was his white privilege. He was, because his parents worked in the automotive industry, he could get some of they run out, you know. That's it. Other than that, if he didn't turn those grades over, he couldn't even get the keys to that car. If he didn't, if he didn't do such and such, I couldn't even come visit. So I was under the impression, because that was my example as a white family, that was kind of how it went down. Yeah, you could have what you want, but it came with the responsibility of doing some other shit that most people don't have to worry about. Brother off at school in the car, like that.
Mm.
Right? You get the car, but you just got to drop your little brother off on your way.
Hey, they all do.
So I was under the impression that, that they were strict. They strict with us. The rules from these white men and women, the rules that they have for us, the rest of society, especially those who are not white, they are strict. You can't talk too loud. They don't want you to be late. They don't want you to wear your hair a certain way. They don't want you wearing bright colors. They don't want you wearing clothes that show your African body. They don't want you. You understand what I'm saying, Lee?
Yeah.
You work corporate America. You know better than me.
Yeah, but did you just say they don't want you to be late?
They don't want you to be late. White folks may get mad when you're late.
Like, that's a natural.
Black people, I feel like, understand. They see what happened. They know about the chaotic of life. They know how hard it is to struggle to be at the same place every day at the same time. We get it. But I just feel like they feel like it's some kind of power struggle that happens when you decide you can be a little bit late.
Mm. That's funny. I love that. That was funny.
But there are rules, right? There are so many rules. Mm-hmm. According to them, on how we should be out here in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But why come they kids don't have to do none of that?
Because they can identify with it, as I said earlier. So they can relate better. You know what I'm saying? So they see themselves in that child. And they understand that, I made the same mistake. Well, I made a similar mistake, or I thought the same, But they don't pass that same rule, or they don't extend that same courtesy to us. No, why would they? Why should they? Then that would humanize us. And humanizing us is not what they want.
Well, a lot of people have been arguing with me, saying that I shouldn't even be looking at the case. It ain't got nothing to do with me. And I try to explain to them that they were not at a welfare rights rally. They were at a Black Lives Matter rally. Okay? And that and the way he was shooting and the way they was doing it, it only was happenstance that he killed whites. He could have very easily killed one of us instead of a white man. Those bullets, I mean, he's a 17-year-old little boy. You can't tell me he's a master marksman.
I disagree with that.
If he was a master marksman, he would have had the discipline to know what was real threat and what wasn't, and it would have been three dead men and not two dead men and a maimed one.
Okay.
He can't be so if we look at it the way I've been looking at it, is those bullets did not have Rosenbaum engraved on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was at a rally, theoretically, for our benefit,
mm-hmm.
saying that black lives indeed matter, okay? So the message we saying is, if you out here fighting for black people, you can die just like them. You can just be like next them. And die just like them.
And is that not the message that they wanted? They want to convey. And they, I mean, the those who want to keep our society in the same stalemate that it has been in since even before the Civil War. If you help, it's a clear message. If you help them, niggas will kill you too. Period. That is the message. So stay in your lane. Don't rise up with them because it will shoot you down too. And as Rodney and I spoke earlier today,
it's not.
I will say here publicly. I said it probably. I'll say it publicly. White folks understand that there are always going to be casualties of war. These folks were casualties of the war. They were the casualties of the war.
What war?
The class war that has continued on this nation. Through this nation, through the decades and eons of time. The class war has continued. The social war has continued. As you said, I started off with the white on white crime is out of hand, and it is. You know what I'm saying? But this is Rodney. Are you driving?
I'm here, brother. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are you driving?
No, sir.
I'm getting some feedback.
I am.
I'm getting some feedback.
Just chilling
okay,
in the house.
All right, I was getting some feedback and something. I wasn't sure what the heck it was. But this is the continuance of, you know, stay in your place. And that's what it is. For black folks, that's white folks. Stay in your place. You go out there, you want to riot, you want to protest, you want to help these black folks, this is what's going to happen. Sit your ass down. Let us continue to work our magic and keep everybody in check where they should be. That's it. That's the cut, clear, concise message. It's the exact message. You know, let's not be fooled. If America was truly free, fair, and equal, there would be a whole lot more talented folks of color, black folks, more successful than they are now. You have an unimaginable number of extremely creative folks, of folks who are geniuses, whom have fallen because the struggle of life just to provide the basic necessities, food, shelter, clothing. Damn the education bit. Just to get food, shelter, and clothing have pulled them down, have made them go down avenues that they did not want to go, but what other options did they have? And you say, okay, well, there are plenty of options. Yes, they are. But how many options were they privy to? Because here you go, and Rodney, you can really attest to this. I never really talked to my high school guidance counselor about what I should and shouldn't do in my latter years because I already had a plan. But Rodney, that was a big thing during the 50s, 60s, 70s. Even the early 80s, you know, everybody went and met with their high school guidance counselors. Like, hey, what do you think I should do? And guidance counselor would pull up your record, blah, blah, blah. Right? You had a lot of brilliant black folks that went into the office of a high school guidance counselor, and no matter their brilliance, no matter their talent, they were recommended to be a housekeeper, a garbage person, postal worker. There's a lot of pride in those jobs. What does that have to do with my talents? What does that have to do with my aspirations? What I understand there's pride in doing those things, but it's not for me. I wanted to be a biologist. I wanted to be a civil engineer. But my high school guy, I mean, we know the stories. My high school guidance counselor told me I should never look into college. I'm walking out of high school with a 3.8, a 4.0 average, and they recommended absolutely no colleges to me whatsoever. They told me I should be a garbage person. They told me I should work for the Postal Service. They told me I should work in one of the factories. I should work in the shipyard. How does that work? It's their biases that they bought into the system. They bought in the system with them, I'm sorry, and projected onto these young folks. You know, Rodney is crusading out there in Vegas to try to stave off the overtaking of the school board. It's very important, very critical. It's critical in the development of any class of people that they are educated and that they take that education and use it in a manner that uplifts the whole. You say what you want to say about the Asians, be it the Indo or Asian Asians, Indo meaning the Indians, the Pakistanis, so on and so forth. They tell their children what the hell they're going to do. You will be a dentist. You will be a lawyer. You will be this. Because all of those jobs are important to the betterment and the sustainment of their community. We allow our children to pick out what the hell they want. No. You know, we allow our children to pick out a school. No. Look, let me tell you something. My money went here. If you don't go there, that's fine. But that's where my money's going. So if you want my money, you will go where my money's going. If not, then that's that. And that's fine. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. It was crazy. But that's how it is. Like I said, you know.
I mean, at some point, our parents stopped sending us in there. They understood that, at least my parent understood that no power is going to rain down on you from these institutions, but that you have to go through it if you want to do anything else afterwards. It's pretty much like, you know, not that they thought it was going to work, but that you know it, that not doing it definitely doesn't work. And mm-hmm. they were just unable to see an example of people who went above and beyond that system and were still able to make it. So they funneled, they said, go in there and get in that schoolhouse, baby, and get whatever it is they got. They did not say, go in there because they're going to make you the person. No, they said, get whatever that is they got. Come on out and let's see if we can use it to work for that work. Finally, they just start telling us, Lee, don't even go in. You can go in there if you want to, but they had seen enough people come out then, and then they had seen enough people not go in there at all and still get what they need. By the time I really started thinking college or not college, my parent was like, well, she had already seen it work without it. She had seen people succeed without college. She didn't believe in it. Like, she didn't say, oh, no, forget college. You know, it's just an option. But she just let me know that it's the easier. It's truly the easier of the two options. But it's not necessary. It is just a suggestion. It truly is a suggestion. If you want to know something, you can get that information outside of an organized education. And that idea that the information is ours and it's right there, it's on the computer or it's at the library, that is something new to us, that we don't have to use white institutions as the conduit to our information anymore. We can just pay your internet bill and sit there on that computer and just try, you know, to tap yourself into knowledge using as many different sources as possible. That is probably going to be tomorrow. That's going to be tomorrow's thing. I don't have to listen to you teach me. I can teach myself.
But hasn't but that's always been an option. You know, Dr. John Henry Clark was self-taught. He was not a formally educated man. He was self-taught. He sat down and he read book after book after book after book. Now, eventually, he was recognized for his prowess with and his wisdom, but he was not a formally educated dude. You know, isn't it funny how now a bachelor's degree is nothing? I mean, it absolutely, you know, folks are asking for higher and higher degrees at every turn. It's like a bachelor's degree is now basically the equivalent of a high school diploma. It's like, okay, well, what else you got? You know what I'm saying? And that is the way that the job market is moving. Okay, I got a bachelor's degree. Oh, that's nice. But do you have the certification? Do you have that certification? No, you really don't. Every time. Because, again, because more and more black and brown folks started getting bachelor's degree. So now we're coming up on a come up. It's like, oh, well, we got to move the line again. So now you need to be CERN qualified. You need to be project manager certified. You need to, almost every black person that grew up in the hood is a project manager. So I'm going to tell you why. You lived on a limited budget, and guess what? You lived. That's what a project manager does. Project manager finds resources at the best price in order to get the job done. They make contracts, boom, 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 everybody gets paid and you move on. That's all a project manager does. That's all they did. And if you can live on a welfare check for 30 freaking days and grow from that zero to 18 to 21, you are a project manager. There's nothing that no one in academia is going to teach you. Nothing. Except for the language. That's it. That's it. But the deeds, you've already done. You've managed that already. Tell me where I'm lying at.
I think that's a beautiful analogy. I mean, honestly, if you can handle your life, if you can actually, as a poor person on the bottom rung of society, handle keeping yourself alive, don't even talk about moving up to another rung. If you can handle, not dying, then you didn't handle the economics of it. You got to learn, you know how to multiply. You damn sure know how to add and subtract. You know how to multiply. Right. You know how to go to some other place to fill out documents to get your help. You know how to use that help at multiple places, from grocery store to this store to that store. You know how to meter the money out so that there's still something possibly left when you get your next installment of money.
You know how to leverage relationships.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There's really nothing that can be taught except how to get more money, how to leave that funding source there. And move on to your next possible funding source. That's the only thing they don't teach you. They try to keep you right there circulating that same little piece of money. And so, that's the only thing. How to get out of that vicious loop is what they don't teach you.
You know how to leverage relationships. You know how to build a relationship with this person in order to get what you need, and then turn around and build a relationship with that person to get what you need. Even if they're on opposite end of the spectrum, you can be that middle person. Again, that's absolutely what a project manager does. I don't get it. What do I need a certification for? Rodney, you've project managed in your past before. Am I lying?
Streetology tends to help us out in a lot of areas. There's many activists and social scientists say that if we would reach the people in the streets and maximize what they do towards normal society occupation, that they would all be making six-figure incomes legally. So there is mm-hmm. something to what you're saying. But I want to go back to this Kenosha shooter thing, because it doesn't make any difference what type of certifications that you have. If you are a black man in America, it was proven once again that your degrees, your certifications, nothing else matters to racist white people. Nothing else matters more than the fact that you are black. Mm-hmm. That is number one. Your class, that's secondary to your blackness. Because Oprah Winfrey, she was pretty rich, and she got treated no different from any other black woman that had no mm-hmm. money. So nothing supersedes your blackness when living in America. Those people, this is huge, and you both kind of actually danced around it a little bit. These people were white that got killed mm-hmm. by a white person. Like Lee said, mm-hmm. white-on-white crime, right? White-on-white violence. You know, that's using the terminology of racist, because there's black-on-black, white-on-white, Latinx, Latinx, Asian, Asian. That's just the nature of things. So we can kind of nullify that. The bottom line is precedence was reasserted. Not reestablished, precedence was reasserted that white people have the right to kill anyone that disturbs their whiteness. In this case, it was white people protesting the shooting of multiple times of an unarmed black man. That's what it was about. Let's not get it twisted. That's what it was about. Those folks who came armed, like the teenager, the boy who came to Kenosha with the AR, they didn't come because it was poor white people. They came because it was white people protesting for a black person, for black people. Their argument about Portland that we hear all the time, it's not about Black Lives Matter, because there was very few Black Lives Matter people there, though it was a Black Lives Matter protest. What it was about was that they were protesting, mostly white people were protesting what happened to George Floyd. The 1-6 insurrection, more white-on-white violence, right? That wasn't about just that Biden won the presidency. Oh, no. It was that black people pushed Biden into the presidency and that he might be for black people. See, it all comes back to that one thing, blackness. And I don't want us to get it confused nor twisted. It is about the blackness. Yes, they use poor whites to make them feel like they have an advantage over blacks so that they could use poor whites to go against their own interests and mm-hmm. fight and kill poor blacks and blacks in general. But ultimately, it is about white privilege, and always the opposite of white is black. And that is what this Kenosha verdict was about. My hope and prayer, because that's over now, it's done, is that the Arbery case doesn't use the same precedent and say, which I think they've already done, well, he went for the gun, so he protected himself just like in the Rittenhouse case, and we had to shoot him. Because if that has, as some have asserted, is the new precedent, I was telling Lee this morning that people used to say constitutionalists and a lot of times conservative white people, Second Amendment white people would say, the First Amendment is our most precious right, and it's so precious that we immediately backed it up with the Second Amendment. Well, what we saw in the judge's courtroom and what we saw in Kenosha was the Second Amendment has just moved ahead of the First Amendment, and that in order for you to exercise your First Amendment right, you're going to have that Second Amendment tool, because those who are racist, white supremacists, militia people, and anti-government, that's what makes up this crowd.
There's an anti-government also.
I'm glad you said that, because I was wondering what was
government.
Anti-government and possibly even anti-police state, because why would you send, if you see in footage and you see the police are there, then why would you send your untrained son to join the ranks of already struggling trained officers? If you must not think much about the state of the officer that's already there on the ground handling the work, or else you would not feed your son into that sausage maker.
So, Rossi, let me explain that to you. No, that's not why. Not from what they tell me. What they tell me is they see a kindred spirit in the slave catchers. But because of politics, the slave catchers are restrained. And so they're going to augment the slave catchers and do what the slave catchers are not allowed to do. That's what comes out of their mouth. If you look at the Fugitive Slave Act, deputized civilians to do fugitive slave catchers work. If you look at the abortion law in Texas, I call it the Fugitive Abortion Law. The Fugitive Abortion Law deputizes citizens to go after people who help women have abortions, whether you agree with abortion or not. That's not the point here. It's that it used the same tactic. This history is so important. And so when some of the information that they wouldn't allow in the jury was Rittenhouse talking about some of these things. And if you go to, whether you go to Parler, Gab, Telegram, any of those, you will hear them saying these same things. And so here's where we stand today. This is the crossroads. When the verdict of the Arbery case comes in, if it comes in like the Kenosha shooter's case, and they say it was self-defense, I can speculate, because I cannot predict the future, I can speculate from history that normally there would be protests, Black Lives Matter, civil rights activists, et cetera, right? But because that's their First Amendment right. But now that they know that these Yaquita folks can roll in with their ARs, will people still exercise their First Amendment right to protest, or will they feel intimidated by the gun and stay home?
This is actually an escalation, because we had two protesters year before last got ran over, right? They drove into the crowd and ran them over. And so now going into the crowd with your AR-15 is the next step up.
Yes. Going in brazenly with your AR. Not concealed weapon. Just rolling in with it out in the open.
Didn't they convict the man that ran that protester over, though?
I don't recall the outcome of that case.
I don't recall.
Yeah. But it also
I'll look it up,
make
but
a
I don't
difference. Because one of the things that they talked about in, I think it's in D.C., is they call it the Patriot wing of the jail there. And so you have all of these like-minded people housed in under the same roof in the institution. If you remember the way that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State kind of got reconfigured themselves, is they put all these people in these prisons together, where they had plenty of time to further radicalize themselves and conspire escape plans, as well as how they're going to get back to their business of terrorism once they got freed. So, again, history is so important. We have to watch what we're doing, because as we have incarcerated these 1-6 people all together, now they're in an echo chamber of their own illogical rhetoric of hate and white hate and white rage that social scientists typically would predict that will radicalize them even more. And Rashi, you said something about the school board. I was talking to a mayoral candidate here in North Las Vegas. It would be our first black mayor if he was to win in North Las Vegas. And he was at one of our school board meetings, fifth largest school district in the country, right? He's at the school board meeting, and he tells me that people, these are Yaquita folks, terrorists, are walking around, pulling up their shirts, showing their guns. Didn't take them out, but just put letting their, so basically what they were doing is they were letting folks know, we're armed, and we're the ones with the power. Now, luckily, for that particular meeting, it was at the county commission chambers, which has metal detectors, so they weren't able to get into the actual chambers. But that's how close they were. So you're talking about escalation? Yes, it has it's already escalated. The shooting, this is a shooting war that's been going on for a long time. We're the primary targets, but sympathetic white people, and this is why I made a post. Do white people not realize that these white racists and white supremacists will shoot and kill them too? They're white. Without them getting the white card from these white racists and white supremacists, their whiteness will not protect them. This is the one time their whiteness will not protect them, and that's from other white people. So hopefully,
hold on for a second.
The majority will start to respond differently.
Well, we have a response from a caller this morning. Want to bring her in while she still has time to be with us. Good morning, sister. How are you, man? How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Shakola? Is that what you're saying?
Shakola. So the past couple of weeks, I've been kind of tuning in and out to the trials of the murderers of Ahmaud Arbery and the Kenosha shooting, and last night was upsetting, not surprised, but still upsetting. And I try to tell people that we are at war. We have been at war for a very, very long time. And this verdict through the actions of the judge who was presiding over the case and the prosecution who also made a lot of mistakes, we could see what was going to happen. Now, this so-called young man, teenager, whatever you want to call him, a murderer, he went to another state armed with a semi-automatic rifle, and his intentions was indeed to kill someone. There can be no dispute about that. He went out the comfort of his home to go find somebody and murder somebody and make an example, because he knew he would get away with it. Now, when we talk about the Second Amendment rights, we have to understand that all the white folks have the guns. They have the ammunition. They have the manufacturers. They have the means of production. And many of us are walking around blinded by whatever problems we think we have in the moment. But ain't going to be no bigger problem than when we're walking into a supermarket or walking from our home and we have a Kyle Rittenhouse walking by police coming for us. So we really need to refocus on what our priorities are, because they are coming for us. We see this time and time again. Some of us I don't want to say, but I don't want to hold a weapon. I don't want to get guns. Guns are dangerous. That's what they want us to believe. They want us to be disjointed and disorganized and disoriented so that when we find ourselves in a position where there's danger for us, we don't have anything to protect us. And this verdict is giving all the people like Kyle Rittenhouse more ammunition to go out and kill with impunity. So either we're going to wake up and arm ourselves and organize, or we're going to be victims once more. And like the woman said, I agree, we can't just sit and do nothing. We have to do something, because either we're going to die, or we're going to live a little longer and still die. So what are our options here? Are we going to just stay mad? Are we going to protest? What are we going to do? Because for me, just getting on my knees and being shot is not an option for me.
I'm going to start with the latter. So what are our options? Our options are, I think you're absolutely right, and I agree with you, that we need to arm up. I mean, we all have participated in some range time together, Rashi, Rodney, myself. That's important, not only as individuals but as a team, that we know that we know what we're doing when it comes to handling firearms. And we're going to get Rashi out some more, even though she shrugs off.
And that's what I wanted
again,
to
like
tell her, ma'am. I was a hard convert. That statement you just said, don't be having them guns is dangerous. I have actually asked an officer of the law to step out of my home, because I told him it was a firearm-free home, that we don't do that in my home. And I realize now that I'm totally converted over. I don't have a gun, but my son and I are going to the range. He's 14. I cannot have him out here looking like the ducks that they got at the carnival lined up behind another duck. I won't have it. But here's the problem. More guns in our – and if you hand sick people guns, if you give hurt people guns, they go out and hurt more people. And they don't necessarily – the gun does not come with a anti – with the mantra, I won't point this at anything that looks like myself. They won't. They just give you the gun. You just get the gun, but you don't get the Africana, Pan-Africanist ideology that stops you from becoming a pawn in their game and killing on their behalf.
But you can, and that's a different story for them.
I agree with that, but we – it's no easy solution, and we must educate ourselves, but we can't,
right.
It's not like we can just sit back and wait, because right. While we're educating ourselves, we need to also be educating ourselves with arms, because they are at the range, and I've seen them. They're 7 and 8 year olds and 10 year old white kids learning how to shoot our black
right.
behinds, and we're at
right.
home watching The Housewives of Atlanta.
Right. I want to ask you, sidebar question, because I can see your phone number, so on and so forth. Are you still in New York?
I'm not in New York. I live in Las Vegas, but I am and will always be from New York.
Well, the reason I asked the question is because the Supreme Court now has that handgun case on its docket that comes from New York, and it looks like it's going to be overturned. So, we know, Rodney, you, we know that it's extremely tough to carry a handgun in New York. It's extremely tough to own a handgun in New York. But the Supreme Court now has a case on the docket that questions the validity of those of laws like such. Now, I live in Maryland currently, but Maryland's laws pretty much mirror New York's laws. So I'm for it. I'm for the overturning of said laws, because unlike Rashi, I believe that it's a more even playing field when everyone can start at 3. You know, you got some people, a lot of people out here starting at 0, and other cats walking around starting at 3. be it a revolver or a semi-automatic at this point in their life. Because, you know, back in the day, you know, you had a little 22 rounder, you was a man. But, well, 38 revolver, you really were the man. Like, oh man, that was the man back in the day. But I think that open carry should be anybody's right. You know, now concealed carry different. Obviously, I'm with that. You know, there needs to be more stringent background checks on it. So I'm with all that. But open carry should be everybody's right. You know what I'm saying? And I think it would put a lot of the foolishness down. Because, you know, if you're strapped and that guy's strapped, how quickly are you to pull a gun on someone who has a gun just like you? You know, I think you would be more open to make a compromise than to shoot out of it. We're not going to become the Wild Wild West. That's just not going to happen. But with this young kid, you know, going back to the specifics of that case, there's nothing in that was right. You know, Rashi's point, his mom put him in the car with a semi-automatic weapon, drove him across state lines, and dropped him off. As I said earlier, like she was dropping him off at the mall. Like, you know, go, baby, have a good time. I'll be back at 7:30 to pick you up. Like, who does that? Who does that? You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't
and right.
Any,
and then she could have potentially lost her son if her son was the one with the bullet in the head instead of those three right. white people. Then what? Then what? You dropped your son off to get murdered.
Right.
Well, but, that's part of their mission. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Right.
That's part of their mission, and I don't want to demonize, and I also don't like to put disclaimer because I feel like it diminishes everything that they have done. But we know that since they first set foot on this continent, all they have been doing has been killing, raping, stealing, lying. I mean, this is nothing new. So her mission, her genetic mission, yeah. Is for us to be eradicated. So she doesn't care if she sacrificed her son. He might as well have been a suicide bomber because his mission is to kill us all. And that's in plain terms. When we understand that, I'm not saying all white people are like that, but history has shown us that enough of them have put us in a predicament where we have nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. So
do you believe that the parent put that malevolent force inside her son, or that her son has control over her overall, has control over her and was able to get her to do that, to drive him there? Did she drive him there, or did he force her to take him somewhere? What do you think, Lee?
Oh, she drove him. She drove him. Going back
no,
to what
but
this
no,
is
not
said.
not did she drive them there because she wanted him there, or did she drive him there because he made it part of their family structure? A, get up and take me somewhere.
She drove him there because she wanted him to be there. She wanted him to be there. She drove him there because she wanted him to be there. That's why I said, I just did exactly what you were saying. But as the sister just said, if he had been a suicide bomber and had to be sacrificed, it would have been the same situation. At least you took out five of them. I may have had to lose you, but at least you took out five of them. And that's all that matters. Sad, but true.
Was there ever any mention to Rittenhouse House Sr., the actual father? Does anybody ever...
They've been separated.
Where is this boy?
They've been separated. They've been separated. The father has struggled with addiction, and, you know, they're not a cohesive unit at all. Not at all. See what happens when the father's out of the house? Happens when white folks do. But, yeah, they've been separated. His mother and his father have been separated. And to answer your question about the Charlottesville driver, he was.
I mean, I guess I'm asking because if she's not, if she don't have, if he's the one in power, Kyle is, then he's able, if there's no other male force and she's just, you know, a tangle-brained white woman, it's him who's in control of that household. He had himself driven to that. And so it would have been his responsibility to use restraint in the moment. But if mm-hmm. it was her who put them batteries in her son's back and empowered him and then drove him there, then he ain't even the one that should have been on trial in the first place. It should have been her.
He was tried as an adult. The system works like it was intended to work. Thank you, sister. Did you have anything else before we go on?
No, I appreciate you guys just allowing me to share, but I do enjoy your radio show, and I think we need to keep speaking the truth as it is so that we can, you know, we can liberate ourselves and not expect the enemy to do it. Thank you.
Awesome. I keep getting up early.
It's
early on left.
All liberation is self-empowered. There is no liberation outside of the self. It does not exist.
Okay. Rodney, what are we going to do now? As a nation, what are we going to do now? How are we going to get this thing on a good foot and keep it on the good foot? What are we going to do now?
Well, I cannot say for sure what we're going to do, but I can speak on what we need to do if we want the founding ideas, or at least the good ones, to continue. And ultimately, I do believe what the sister is saying. We know from social scientists that white men see a gun as an extension of their phallus. So the bigger the gun, the more powerful the gun, the more powerful they feel, because ultimately, you know, when you look at the history of most of these incidents, they involve race, but it's also a level of insecurity about somehow white women procreating with black men. So in order to prevent that from happening, they put established onerous laws against white women. Like, for example, we talked about it on the show before, if a white woman had relations with a black man, free or slave, then white men had the authority to make that woman a slave. Think about that. That's how far they went into this. We talked about the 1898 insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina. That was about white men's fear of white women having sex with black men. They said that black men were ravaging the countryside, raping white women. And then a newspaper publisher in the largest city at the time in North Carolina called Wilmington, the publisher Alexander Manley, gave a rebuttal, and it was actually a white woman who said that black men should be hung 1,000 per day because of them having sexual relationships with white women. And Alexander Manley published in his newspaper that, wait a minute, it's not that we're going out there raping white women. White women have the agency and the desire to, and they're having, this is consensual sex with white women wanting to be with black men. For that, they burned the town. They killed many people, burned the newspaper down. And that was the first, and as far as I know, only successful insurrection in the history of this country. That's how far they have gone, and that's how far they will go and probably further. So let's understand the forces behind it. Those things have not changed in their mind. Black people have to consider strapping up. As you consider that, it is a big step of escalation, as Sister Rashi says, because remember the whole Boogaloo movement, the Boogaloo boys, Proud Boys are a part of it, is to create a race war. The violence is on the side of these racist white supremacists. chauvinists, because that's what the Proud Boys are, Western chauvinists and white supremacists too. But that's them talking about violence, no different than Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. That's why we call them Al-Qaeda here, is because they're using the same playbooks as terrorists have used overseas. And so I would ask everybody to visualize for a minute. Just take a minute, visualize this. The Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, all turned white, and they came into America, and they infiltrated America at every level of activity. In the workplace, their doctors, their nurses, their pharmacists, their bankers, supervisors at the job, law enforcement, military, elected officials, even up to the United States Senate, and we just had one in the highest office of the land, the presidency of the United States of America. Imagine Al-Qaeda and ISIL has infiltrated the United States and hold those positions. What would you do then? Or let's take it, let's lower it a little bit. They're in the United States. They're in some of those positions, and you know that they're trying to get more. How would you act? How would you conduct yourselves? And more importantly, it's not just that black people should consider how we should move forward, but it's also, this is more for white people. This is more for white people. Those are white supremacists. Notice white prefix, white supremacists, white racists. Those are the people who want to have a race war. Those are the people who want to take down the United States government. Those are the people who are warring against the Constitution. Lee and I both took an oath, I think, other than my fraternity, the only oath I ever took in my life, I believe, was to protect and defend the United States Constitution from enemies both foreign and domestic. Well, we used to talk, conservatives used to talk about this all the time, and the flag and the men who died for the freedoms that we had. The number one freedom, the First Amendment, the freedom to protest, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly. That's all a part of the First Amendment. We even studied it on our Saturday afternoon radio show. This is what's at stake. And in order for us to maintain this and then move forward and beyond this, this is where white people are going to need to open their eyes. Yes, they need to wake up. And then they need to act, because as we saw, those were white people that those white racists and whites, that white racist, that white supremacist, that child who has been indoctrinated, he killed white people. If he'll kill white people, he'll sure enough kill black people. And when there's the next protest, will we even protest? Because of fear of intimidation? Will we go to the polls because of the deputizing of poll workers? Will we go? History says that we won't. Imagine that the things that's happened in Texas, those laws that they're passing, burning books, right, changing history to further their lies of the lost cause. Imagine if you took that legislative body, as you imagine this future of ours. But that's the United States Congress, because if the United States Congress passes the same laws that were passed in Texas, the Fugitive Abortion Act, the suppression of voter rights, if the United States passed that, wrote and passed a bill into law, even if President Biden vetoed it, if the Congress has enough votes to overrule the veto, that becomes the law of the land. We are one election, 1 year away from Jim Crow coming back to the United States of America.
Brother Rodney, can you... I have to admit that I had got a little bogged down with work, and I'm not 100% sure what happened with the Ahmaud Arbery case. Can you tell me about the logistics of that Aubrey trial, please? I don't mean to sound. I just really would like to hear it from someone who's probably been focused and listening to it.
Well, I haven't been that focused to it, but the trial is ongoing, so that's probably the most important piece right now. But it's ongoing right after the verdict of this Kenosha trial. And one of the things that they've already injected in the trial was that it was self-defense. In other words, they had laws for citizens' arrest. They were doing a public, the three killers, were doing their public service because there was supposedly some theft or crime in their community, and they suspected Arbery of being a criminal. And so they were doing their civic duty in initiating a civilian arrest against another citizen who then attacked them, even though they were the ones chasing him. And, it's almost like they're on a horse and got a rope, and they're driving, herding him. And when he went to defend himself, because obviously black people don't have stand-your-ground laws to protect them, right? It seems that we don't have self-defense laws to protect us. When he went to defend himself against someone brandishing a gun directed towards him after that same person chased him, he was shot. And so they're saying that Arbery was the aggressor, and that it's really a simple case of self-defense.
So self-defense is where we need to start teasing this out at then. Self-defense. What does it mean? What are the lines? Yeah.
So
when you have video. Hold on. So there's video of this incident going on. You know, this cat was running. Just down, doing this jog. I mean, what look, y'all. I had to catch myself because I was trying to be rational. Look, y'all. In a time in which not only everything happened in the past is becoming anew, right? So Rodney thought this before. Jim Crow is rearing its ugly head right and left and right. Okay. This is a litmus test as to how far that really has gone, okay? Again, going back to where I started before I got flustered and decided to change my thinking. There's video of this. There's clear-cut video of this. And if that is not enough to keep Mr. Arbery off of trial, because this is not him being on trial. It should not be about him being on trial. It should be the three killers and their trial for killing him. If that's not enough, then it is really time to consider a blessing. It really is. Man, look, we are no longer safe in this country. We would no longer be safe in this country. Period. And the shape of the court, the highest court in the land, says that they would not be partial to granting us safety. Unfortunately, Chief Justice Roberts has lost control of the court. Unfortunately, the court is leaning more and more conservative/racist day in and day out. Unfortunately, for us, that reality is on display more often and with more fever than I have ever seen in my lifetime. But it's not a far cry when you think of Rodney's scenario. Imagine the government being infiltrated. Well, the government was infiltrated. It was. It was. For whatever reason, those in the other party took a hard stance against the protection of people that look like us. And that stance is playing out, and it is one that has and will continue to have a huge impact on our daily lives. Now, again, how deep and strong that hold is, this will truly be a test. Not only this, but if there is an appeal and how the appeal goes. That will be the strongest of tests. But this is a measuring stick as to just how far gone our country is from being fair and equitable. It is a true measuring stick to relate to us just how far our country has gone from being fair and true.
And Lee, the world is watching.
Yes.
We cannot have this kind of stuff go on without the people watching. Not our people, not just our people, all people. They watching how we get down because we the ones that come in and blow them up when we say they being unfair, right? When they not doing right, we amass our military force in order to get them right. So now when they see this kind of carnage go on here, all it does is further remove that glitter and glitz away from the American name. And I foresee foresee us having an immigration slowdown. People are going to get tired of showing up to the freak show.
Right. And, you know, that happened, though, already under 45, where the Europeans took the lead on the global stage as far as democracy was concerned. America was not the global leader with respect to democracy because she proved to be a joke. When you elect a racist to the highest office of the land, you put the clown show on full display for everybody. And the clowns came out. What did you expect was going to happen? That's why Chancellor Merkel was the face and the voice of democracy in the absence of adults in the room. We are fighting an uphill battle to get back to the table and the face or leadership of that position. We are very much in a position to fall back yet again, and not so much because we have a president that's not hip to what's going on, but we have a president that's really trying to solve the problem of America within America with very little emphasis, at least at this point, on the international stage. We have a president that was handicapped, and I said this shit beforehand, and very rarely do I say I told you at y'all show, but I'm going to say this damn go around. He's handicapped by his vice president. What has Kamala done? What has she done? They've been in office now for a year, almost two. What has she done? She's been a distraction more than anything. I said that she was the wrong pick. I continue to say she was the wrong damn pick. I don't know why they rolled with her. They being the Democrats, I don't know why the hell they rolled with her, but they did. She was the wrong pick. She was the wrong damn pick. It does nothing for the party, in my opinion. It did nothing for the party, in my opinion. I don't know where the pick helped him sway independence. I don't know where the pick helped him sway indecisive. I don't get it. It didn't make any sense. I still say he should have ran with Beto. Rodney, I know you disagree, but my point to that is at least you put yourself in position where you can speak directly to the people in Texas and help the people in Texas. So now it makes the gubernatorial candidate in Texas have even a much more better chance to pull off an upset in the state of Texas, which the Democrats need. They need to win the state of Texas. At least start winning the state of Texas, because with the redistricting that's going on, with the gerrymandering that's going on, that's how it's going to be. You need that piece in order to win national elections. You need that piece in order to put judges on the Supreme Court, on the appellate court, so on and so forth. You need that piece because you have to control Congress. You can't control Congress if you don't have that piece. There are going to be more congressmen and I think at least one more senator going to – no, not one more senator because every state has two, I'm sorry. But more congressmen going to Congress out of Texas because of the population boom. You control Texas, highly influential in nationwide politics. Boy, I tell you, what we need to do, we need to recognize that we're all in this shit together. That's first and foremost. Because as I alluded to earlier today, white folks with money and influence don't care. They don't. They're pretty much isolated and insulated from all of this. So why should they care? Their children are pretty much insulated and isolated as well. You need to get those resources to the people and allow the people to grow utilizing those resources. Am I off?
No, you're not off. You're not off, but here's the issue. When we start talking about resources, it ain't like we going to our aunts and uncles. That means you're going to the state. You're going to the federals or the state. And as long as you, like you said earlier, these positions are entrenched with people who are, it's their job not to release the funds. It's their job to make sure certain people get allocated this help first. And not only that, it's their personal mission.
No, that's not their job.
To make sure.
That's not their job. It's their mission. There you go. It's not their job. It's their job to actually take care of everybody. But it's their mission to only do for those whom they want
organizations are jam-packed with call they self-helpful white folks, they just want to serve the people, okay? As long as those people are the ones that you have to go and sit down with and give them all your documents and make your claim and a case with them, it's a waste of time. They've already, you say they packed the courts, Mr. Rodney. Not only have they packed the court, they didn't pack the school district, they didn't pack the help zone, they didn't, so that they know how to stop us from progressing in very realistic ways, not no guidance counselor stuff, because you could have ignored your guidance counselor after he told you to go get you a post office job. But you can't ignore when you go down to get help or go get a mortgage, and they give you, a loan for $50,000 with a $50,000 interest. You got to pay them $100,000 for borrowing $50,000 on a house that you buy in a community that's going to depreciate and not appreciate. You understand? Where do you go? How do you climb out of that when you don't have an organization? So here we go. You asked Mr. Rodney, where do we go from here? We have to create an organization where we funnel money from this government, and our personal mission is to exclusively help those who are statistically unhelped by the others. How about that?
I like that. Rodney, what are your thoughts? What do you feel?
Well, I think that I'm glad that the conversation did take this transition to action. And I hear many, unfortunately, we cannot be in a holding pattern. We have to move. I know some people say, well, Rodney, what difference is it whether we have a Democrat or a Republican? And sometimes, some cases, it doesn't. But if I have a choice between Jim Crow and somebody who doesn't support Jim Crow, it don't even make a difference if in their minds they're okay with it, but their policies are against it. Voting for the Jim Crow person, I'm voting for the person who's not going to push Jim Crow. That's where we find ourselves today. The Voting Rights Act was gutted in the last administration, which has led to a lot of the voter suppression and intimidation that we're seeing now. We took our eye off the ball. The Democrats took it too easy. Frederick Douglass says you have to constantly apply pressure. Otherwise, it's like once you have it, you have to hold on it with the same firm grip, because once you start slipping, somebody's waiting to pull it out your hand. So we see that white racists, white supremacists spoke with forked tongue to our Native brothers and sisters, and they're still doing it today with the lies that we no longer need protections, because obviously not only do black people still need those protections, but we're seeing from the Kenosha shooters situation that white people who are not down with the racists and white supremacists need that same protection. The only way that these laws, and I realize they're laws on paper, and there'll be no enforcement if there isn't the words on paper, right, is we have to prevent, and I'm a nonpartisan. I'm a registered nonpartisan. I believe that both parties are the problem. But right now, my enemy is also the enemy of the other party. So we have to align ourselves for now with the Democrats. We have to make some demands on them. And we have to keep at all costs Republicans out of office. We cannot allow them to take over the United States House of Representatives. We cannot allow them to take over the United States Senate, because they have the power to write laws. The president has two options. He signs it because he agrees with it, or he vetoes it. Well, he doesn't get the final word on the law. The United States Congress gets it. Yes, he can veto it, but if too many Republicans get in, or I should say too many Trumpublicans get in, because that's what it's turned into, then they can overrule the veto. And as I said earlier, that vetoed bill will become law. And everything that you see happening in places like Texas, Arizona, a little bit in Wisconsin, Philadelphia, all of those things will come to pass for this nation. That means you will have no right to vote. You will have no First Amendment right. You will have no Second Amendment right. You will have no Fifth Amendment, no Fourth, no Ninth. I mean, the list goes on, because they're not talking about giving those rights. They don't care about this country. They are not patriots. They do not even believe in America. Not only are these white supremacists and racists, not only are they that, but they are also anti-American. Don't let them fool you, wrapping themselves in the flag. That's just cover, to cover up who they really are. They are anti-Americans. They are no different. As a matter of fact, we could call them Al-Qaeda in America, or My short abbreviation is Y'all Quita. So voting, registering to vote and voting. If you don't do it now, you don't have to worry about it later because you won't have the opportunity to do it. It simply won't be your right. It will, not only will Jim Crow come back into effect legally, but because they saw how much black people still got under Jim Crow, it will be worse and more restrictive than Jim Crow. So, and Rashi said it good, school board meetings. We got to take back the school boards because once they take over the school boards, they have totally taken over the minds of the next generation of children. That means our grandchildren will be stuck with this ilk. We have to get active. Every elected office counts.
All right. Well, Brother Rodney, I'd like to finish. I asked Brother Lee for a few minutes, and I think this is the perfect segue. I like to share, because I go to a fairly avant-garde, I work at a fairly avant-garde school. We're the only school in the state of Missouri that teaches about Africa at all, says it in a positive stance, teaches about or has an African-centered curriculum. We're the only one. I think even other than in Illinois, there's two of them in this whole region, banned from top to bottom all the way down to Texas. And so one of the things we're discussing this month, the children are the Black Seminoles and the Gullah Wars and how important it was for the Gullah Wars and for the Civil War to even ever exist in the first place. Gullah people would be formerly enslaved people who ran from South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia. Towards the Florida panhandle, so that they, which was, and we're talking about late 1700s, early 1800s, the Florida region was owned by the Spanish. And so what happened was these people were able to reimagine their lives, govern themselves, because the Spanish were notoriously lax when it comes to really looking and governing their territory. It was more about just claiming and saying that they owned it than it was about bringing it under Spanish rule. It was mostly about bringing them under Catholicism. And so these people who had decided, you know, that they would be even cool with even a little Catholicism when no one was watching, if they could be free in Florida. And so what begins is that the whole idea of Nat Turner and the revolutions there were so that they also could flee, not north like most people think all the time that we went north, but instead south. And so we went as south as Mexico when we got into the Gullah Wars. We were pushed as Africans in formerly enslaved in America. We were pushed as south as Mexico, the name of the town, I'm sorry, has jumped out of my mind, of course. One of the things I wanted to discuss, though, was how important it was for us to wage these wars, and what eventually came was a war amongst, well, white people, you know, on white people. They really wanted to be able to own this whole parcel of land the way we have it now. And with the Gullah Geechee people being free in Florida, they were unable to secure one of their major ports, is the best way I could explain it. And that port was a stair step into Haiti, which at, during this time had overthrown Napoleon and the French and was making itself a safe haven for any African who was ready to create a nation state down south and fight for their independence. So what was decided by Andrew Jackson was that that whole territory had to be cleared. And what they agreed to do was the Trail of Tears, what we call now the Trail of Tears. And that's the relocation of these Native American peoples, some called Seminole, some Cree, some Choctaw, to the Oklahoma region, which was at that time called Indian Territory. Well, some of us, the Black Seminoles, had already integrated into the Native American society and were able to choose whether or not we wanted to migrate with the Native Americans or, quite frankly, be re-enslaved. Many of us went with them. Some went into the swamps of the Florida, what we call now the Florida Everglades. And in the Florida Everglades, they waged something called guerrilla warfare. That's the best way I could explain it, Mr. Rodney Lee. They found ways of adapting in that swamp so that they sent military troop after military troop in there to clear the land, of course, so that it can be, I think the term is ratified into the American, into America, what then was already America and had developed into America. So when they would send people into these swamps, these people were able to use old traditional techniques, both taught by Native Americans and from the Native countries they came from, in order to escape recapturing. And they still, their civilizations exist right now, still today, because they were able to use their sly and cunning, and they still have that land. They're still down there in that region, in and around the lower southern eastern regions of the Florida Everglades Panhandle. Now, right now, the Native Americans who did agree to kind of make a deal with the United States and move and shift, they sued the United States and were given an endowment. With this endowment, they built the Daytona Beach Hard Rock Cafe, which makes like billions of dollars a year. When the Black, genetically proven Black Seminoles asked those Native American Seminoles to be included in the endowment, the United States of America made it quite clear that if they include those Black Seminoles, that they will not get the endowment. So the wheeling and dealing, if somebody thinks that Andrew Jackson or you know, one of those Donald Rumsfeld Cheney guys was the end of our wheeling and dealings, no, they need to understand that there is a systemic administrative nature to disenfranchisement. They come in with not just guns, but with paper and pens and signature you out of your heritage and your lineage and your rightful owned hold on the country as it is. So that's what I wanted to talk to you about, to tell you that my children right now are learning not just what a Seminole is, they're also learning how to adopt in swamp-like environments. They're learning guerrilla warfare tactics in order to escape torture. They're also learning about economic, what happens now with those people, economic ventures. So if you find such a place, be willing to fund such a place. And if you can't find such a place where you can teach your children this way, you have to get right now up and try to create such a place, because we can't be the only ones teaching on this critical on this level of critical analysis. It has to happen at least in one place per state. What do you think, Mr. Rodney?
I think that you're absolutely right. We talked about it on my show. We talked about it on Lee's show for years. I even have a Facebook called "What Do Black People Want? The Black Agenda." I think it's like 12, 13 years old. I'm not sure now. And it lists like the top 10 things that we have to do. And one of those things is we have to teach ourselves, but we also have to make sure that it's taught in the school system, because it does influence mind. And as much as it can influence the minds of black people, the minds that are at the levers of power are white people. And so, you know, I tend to say every year we graduate another crop of white supremacists and racists because they've been indoctrinated in white supremacy madrasas called the United States public school system that has uses a similar curriculum in private schools too. Matter of fact, even more so. So we have to educate ourselves. But to be quite frank, there is not enough of us who know because that we were never taught it. And unfortunately, the passing down of knowledge by word of mouth from one generation to the next has waned. So the only way that we can or one of the main ways, if not the only way, to educate ourselves as well as white people and others about the history of us is we have to ensure that an integrated curriculum that talks about African / African-American history and culture is a part of every level of education in this country in all publicly funded schools. As a matter of fact, I will say this, and I've said this before. When you talk to a candidate that wants your vote, regardless of what office, even if they say, hey, I'm the dog catcher, that has nothing to do with me. You want them to say, and what you want to ask them, and then if they give you the wrong answer, you want to tell them that they need to support integrating and incorporating African / African-American history and culture through all curricula at every grade level in the publicly funded public school system. And it needs to start happening as soon as possible, ASAP. It has to, because the lost cause brainwashing that's been instilled by the United Daughters of the Confederacy is still at play. And in places like Texas, remember, we're indentured servants. My family's state, North Carolina, where we talked about the 1898 insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina, they don't teach that in the schools there. The only insurrection in the history of this country doesn't get taught in the schools, in the state and in the county in which it happened. We have to push this. There can be no equivocation, and you should not allow any candidates to equivocate on this. That should be a litmus test for your vote.
I look at
it. Brother Rod.
I'm sorry, Rashi. I'm going to get in, then I'm going to let you in. I look at it like this, and, you know, we've talked about this in the past, privately and publicly. Education starts and ends at home. Like, you cannot allow specifically this system to be the only stream of knowledge that your children have. It behooves you to learn so that you can teach your children, and or if not, you know yourself, at least know enough to point them in the direction of a good book, even if it's a movie at this point, something to give them more information about themselves and the struggle that people like themselves have gone through in order for them to make it and get here. Go ahead, Rashi. I'm sorry. Rashi?
Sorry about that. What I would like to say is, and I'm sorry, there are some internal issues here at home, but I want to say this to end it. I am a soldier in the fight for our liberation, whatever it looks like, Lee. If it's justice, let's do it. If it's medical, and it's all these fronts, right? There's no front we can talk about where we ain't being hurt. I chose my foot in the battle is in education, like Rodney said. And we don't start at a foundation from little young minds. Young minds trained right will not accept bullshit. If we can kill it at the young mind stage, a whole lot of what's being accepted now as fact will become fiction. And we can work towards whatever plan and agenda Rodney has concocted, because I'm sure he did his research. But I also being, you know, armed and ready for people like Kyle Rittenhouse, ready for the three dudes that run you down in a truck, and, you know, because you looked into a building and did some tour of a piece of construction, being ready for people who would drag you behind a truck like they did Mr. Bird, being ready for people who would do medical testing on you, put you in a black site in a building in Chicago. We will never really be ready for the kind of terror that has been reigned in this new terror of erasing identities, using our names to do illegal acts to where we're not savvy enough to clear it. It's just a barrage. So when you see somebody talking to themselves crazy, they know they're not crazy. They actually 100% aware of exactly what's going on. And so you ready? You ready to deal with what it looks like to be under attack?
Oh, absolutely.
You are. You're a military man. You know what it means to be under, like, bullet attack. But, yeah, every facet of your being has some pathology to it. Even the food you're being handed has a little bit more arsenic in it because of the region you live in. The water you drink has a little bit more chlorine or something in it because of the pipes is old or whatever. The house, the foundation on the house you built, you live on, is shaking because they gave you land that was previously where an aqueduct was. You understand? There is no facet of your reality that is not under attack. And when we get it in our heads, you pick your vein, you pick your lane in the struggle, and you start fucking boxing, bro.
Rodney, any words to close out? Okay. Rashi, any words to close out?
Yes. I think that, you know, Lee said you got to know the history. I would ask everyone to take a moment to think about how many books have you read this year? How many books have you read? And of the books that you read this year, how many of them had something to do with our history and culture on this continent and on the mother continent? And ask your children, what do they know about us? Did they know about the 1898 insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina, that had the largest population of Gullah people, that after the insurrection no longer had the largest population of Gullah people? That's how many were killed and were run out of town. Do they know that? Do they know that there was an actual insurrection in the history of this country, and it was by white racists and white supremacists that overthrew a duly elected government? Here's one. Do they know that on November 23rd, 1887, that there was almost another insurrection, same part of the country? Do they know that? And now I'm going to bet, and I'm not a betting person. Matter of fact, if I was a betting person, I'd bet that they don't know, unless they listen to this show, right? And I would also tell whatever organizations that might be listening, or members of organizations, or people who go to organizational meetings. We have our NAACP meeting today. When you start your meeting, give them a bit of our history, because that might be the only place they get it, because they're not getting it in schools. I believe what Lee says, that it should start in the home, and we should not leave it up to outside sources. But because of the majority of people in the home don't know, I cannot expect them to teach what they don't know, because they don't even know they need to teach it. For those of us who do know, we cannot be in every home. So the way to magnify the force multiplier, all we have, is to ensure that we get this in our schools, our religious institutions. You can do it too. So that's what I have to leave. We have to do this for our sake. We have to do it to save the country, which is also for our sake. And we need white people to open their eyes. And it's okay to be woke, because being asleep is almost costing us to lose this country.
I'm sorry, y'all. That's my take. Wu-Tang Forever. I've been on that Wu Saga all week long. So you all have a great, safe weekend. Please enjoy yourself. Don't get too fat on that turkey. We'll see you all on the back end of Thanksgiving. Until then, as we say every week, peace!